When it comes to the binders, right, when it comes to selecting the binders, you're going to have basically five different categories, right? The ones that we call inorganic, right, like zeolite and some of that, organoclay, right, because the clay is something, you know, that binds some of these mycotoxins. Organics, algae, yeast, you know, those are, and then activated charcoal, those are the old versions and the ones that we use for many years. And the newer version are some of these enzymes. So they are called deactivated, right? And then you can make a mix in your binder.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com. Hi-D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status to deliver higher milk yield and carcass efficiency. Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together.
Hi, welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today, I'm honored to welcome to the show Dr. Gustavo Schuneman, who's a professor of dairy cattle health and management in the Department of Veterinary Preventative Medicine at The Ohio State University. Dr. Schuneman, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Barry, for the opportunity and to interact with you and your audience.
Gustavo, if you don't mind, I'm curious, you know, where did you grow up? Were you born on a farm? Did you grow up in agriculture or did you migrate into this?
Yeah, I'm originally from Argentina, but I grew up on a farm and I was living at the farm until I was 25.
Oh, okay.
And I get, you know, my family is running a large crop operation and cattle operation in southeast of Buenos Aires province near the Atlantic Ocean. And very similar to what is here in India and Ohio, as far as the weather goes and what most of the crops is. And I definitely developed the interest in cattle more than in the crop inside of the business. I went to the vet school there, and then I had the opportunity to come to the U.S. and I did my master program and PhD on physiology and in particular reproductive physiology, and I worked quite a bit with bulls, and for most of my graduate program. And that is when I work in a specific in one of the toxin, the mycotoxin, because it affects fertility. I think in the business, the dairy business in general, you know, when it comes to these mycotoxin, perhaps the male side has way more information because they are very sensitive to some of these compounds. So my first experience working with that was on how it affects fertility. And then I developed a little bit later on in my career more the interest and pre-partum cows.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, most people in the dairy sector don't think a lot about the bulls that are out there generating semen, right? But if one bull is having problems, that's potentially, you know, many, many breedings that are lost, right? So
yeah, the difficulty for the male side is that it's very hard to see the effect when you assess the sperm. So yeah. But definitely, you know, in beef cattle, it's very common, the, you know, fescue toxicosis, and which is very, you know, it's a similar compound to other mycotoxin that is produced by fungus and in the soil. And so, yes, they definitely have a very good quality control when it comes to, you know, make sure the bulls are not fed, because we also feed, you know, some of the bull corn silage.
Sure.
And the TMR has to be low in mycotoxin contamination. So they're very sensitive. It affects the spermatogenesis cycle and therefore it could impact fertility.
Where did you do that, the graduate work?
I did the graduate studies in Tennessee, Knoxville, Tennessee, in the Department of Animal Science, and a little bit the combination of a program with the vet school.
Very good. And so how long have you been at Ohio State then?
I've been at Ohio State now. So I came to Ohio State in 2008. And so I've been here for I'm going to get closer to my 25th year. And I start my position as, you know, an extension veterinarian. So 65% of my time when I came to Ohio is an extension. And 35% remaining, I do research and teaching, mostly for our senior vet student. And so most of my work when it comes to extension is on the management side, you know, people and especially system more than anything else, you know, how to get these systems more consistent and get people together and to accomplish consistency at the farm level.
Nice. And that's still your appointment, 65% extension, is that correct?
Still, my appointment have no change. So 65% is extension, 35% is teaching or research.
I know you definitely put out some nice articles, and one thing I appreciate about, you know, what you do, at least in your articles, is it's kind of unique from, you know, 90% of what people put out. You can tell you're focusing on some unique questions that are, I think, really valuable for the industry.
Beta-carotene impacts reproductive performance in cattle. Because the main sources of beta-carotene are forages, most cattle don't get enough. Victus Transition from DSM Firmenich contains a blend of beta-carotene and mixed tocopherols, which provide needed vitamin A and antioxidants. Victus Transition fed cattle have better fertility rates and improved colostrum quality. Make sure your cattle get the beta-carotene they need with Victus Transition. Visit dsm.com/Victus Transition.
Well, you know, you already alluded to, I guess, the main thing we wanted to talk about today, which is digging in a little more into mycotoxins and impacts in the dairy industry. You know, with your unique background, we thought we could dig a little bit more into what are some of the impacts on the animal instead of just, you know, talking about how do we find and diagnose these things, better understanding why these compounds are having a negative impact on a lot of animals. So first of all, maybe you can make sure everybody listening is kind of up to speed on, you know, what is a mycotoxin in the first place?
Yeah, that is a very, very interesting question. It's a chemical compound, and which is available in nature. I think we need to see these more from the context that we've been dealing with mycotoxin since evolution, right? It's part of the soil health.
Yep.
And most, you know, it's a chemical compound produced by these fungi, and there are many, you know, different fungi that can produce, some of them can produce more than one mycotoxin, right? And as any of these, you know, microorganisms in the soil, they are very sensitive to stress. So every time that there is an stress, it triggers the production of some of these compounds. Some of them are very good. I mean, they're beneficial for us. But some of the other are, you know, are counterproductive. So they cause problems. They are toxic for cells. They are toxic when we ingest it in high concentration. As a matter of fact, the FDA regulates for human consumption specific mycotoxins, especially those that are associated with cancer.
Yep.
Right, in people. So cereals, when you go on Kroger and you buy cereal, I mean, they'll go through some of the regulatory, you know, testing. And in milk, as a matter of fact, also we regulate, you know, aflatoxin because that is correlated with cancer in individuals. But there are a number of other compounds that are not regulated because it doesn't cause, you know, issues for us in human and the food chain. But definitely do have a problem for cattle, and in particular these subclinical, what would be, you know, not that they will kill the cow, but it will cause this production issue like abortion, low milk yield, you know, a number of the other problems that we see, low digestibility in the rumen. It affects some of the bacteria that produce this vitamin B complex in the rumen, and then some of that vitamin B complex is responsible to form the keratin plaque in the teeth canal, and then you have more mastitis and so on. So it caused some of the issues. And I think as we learn more and more, we were able to identify some of those, you know, mycotoxin compounds. And there are over 400. So, and we know very little about some of them. So some, like, for example, bimotoxin, we recognize that that is something, a potential issue on any farm. And for two reasons. One is because it has a negative connotation when it comes to health and performance of the cows. But on the other hand, it's because it's so difficult to control it once you identify that your corn silage is contaminated, right? And most of these compounds will come, the majority of them, in the field. So every harvest, you had to test some of your corn silage just to see what the level of contamination might be. And then a portion of the other can be or what we know as storage, right? And some of these fungus really like the winter, right? And the cold winter with the snow and everything. So every time that you stack up, you know, hay outside and they are exposed to the element, that means, you know, rain or snow, you know, you have to be aware that maybe you are feeding, you know, after the winter, a lot of mycotoxin to your cow. So, and some of these fungus are very interesting to see how they perform. So either the majority will come from the field and then a portion of them because of storage. And another important characteristic of these mycotoxia, they are very, very stable. Chemical compound is stable. So for example, heat processing will not destroy them, right? So you there are some reports that it says, you know, you need at least 600 Celsius. It's extremely high temperature, but they have no nutritional value for us. So cooking, for example, will not break the molecule. So, but that is important on, for example, when we process the corn for ethanol, and then there is a byproduct. So the processing will do have some temperature involved in the process, but that doesn't mean they will destroy anything. So the molecules are very stable. And after the processing, an example of the distillers, so it will come out very concentrated, right? And so the concentration, it could increase fivefold because of the processing. So definitely we do check. And what really matters at the cow level is total mycotoxin and TMR. You can have one or two ingredients that has a little higher contamination, but in the total TMR is very low. So usually we are not very much concerned about that. The problem is when that one or two ingredient, it is very, very high, and that end up contaminating the total TMR. So what that means for the farm is, yeah, knowing the ingredient contamination, you can manage your inclusion rate. And through the inclusion rate, you can lower contamination TMR.
Typically, what I see when mycotoxins come up on a dairy farm, it's because the lactating cows are either showing some signs of diarrhea or there's some sort of unexplained decrease in productivity, and we're kind of searching for reasons for those outcomes, or maybe you know, maybe we had a poor crop year and we know that that's a risk. But I know you've had interest in maybe other groups of animals on the farm where the impact you know, maybe almost greater, but they're kind of overlooked
because it's so difficult, Barry, to, you know, some often we hear that everything is mycotoxin the problem. And not I don't want to be like that. Not always is the case, right? Not always.
Right.
It's something that we definitely need to keep an eye on. The way that I do it, you know, when I help the farmers figure that out, that could be a problem, you have to take a more holistic approach. You got to look the cow, right? And because every year the combination of mycotoxin, we are not always dealing with one mycotoxin. You are often with four, three, you know, or more, or five mycotoxins,
yep.
Right? It's the combination. And there are very little information in the literature to see whether or not there is an additive effect or, you know, or how they work on some of them. We know that when we have one mycotoxin, you can definitely have other issues, right? And one thing for you to know that you have a potential issue with mycotoxin is looking at gestation length, right? And divide, because in most computer record system, you can, you know, that information is, I would say, all farmers, regardless of size, they know at calving how many day cow was in gestation based on expected calving day, the actual gestation. So they look at the numbers, you know, the proportion of cow with short gestation. That is the most critical. I think if you want to look at inflammation in a practical way at the farm level, for the easiest way is to look at gestation length, because it's so sensitive to that, right? Example, heat stress. We all know that heat stress will short, you know, will cause short gestation. So cow go earlier in labor, and that usually is a problem. It's a major problem for the cow and for the calf, right? They come out small, they have more diarrhea early on, the first 20 days alive, and they also have, the cow has also health problems, right? So twin pregnancy is another that cause short gestation. The cow go in labor about 7 days earlier, and it's because of stress, space and stress. And stress is also associated, you know, it could trigger, you know, cortisol in blood, and that trigger labor. So in general, we know that labor is triggered by the calf, right? When the calf reach maturity, that is when signal the dam, I'm ready to come out, right? And that is how the process, the physiological process is, right? A trigger labor. But also you could trigger early, like heat stress, twin pregnancies, right? Heifers are more sensitive than cows, right? And they will have more short gestations. And sire is another confounding effect, right? And we learn more about sire when we start doing this beef on day, right? Because we were monitoring before. So sire has a major, you know, implication. Sire has more effect on gestation length, and the dam has more effect on birth weight. Both are directly associated. The longer they stay inside, the bigger they will come out.
Wow, the sire actually has more impact on gestation length than the dam that's carrying the calf.
Yeah. It usually like that. But both are direct associates, right? And back in the 70s or 80s, there was a lot of research in gestation length. To have cows with short gestation, they quickly figure out. So the AI industry, they already know, don't touch gestation length. Every time you touch gestation length, it's a problem, right? Unless that the sire is designed for that. So there is a DNA composition for each one of us when we were born, right, on how many days is supposed to be the gestation length. So once you monitor gestation length, like short gestations in any dairy farm, in particular Holsteins, right, beef bulls are longer gestation. It's about 7 days on average longer than dairy cows, right? And so we look at, you know, normal gestation length in cows is about 254. To 298, right? That is the window, right? Short gestations are those that run from 254 to 269, right? That is about 14, 15 days there, right? And that should not be more than 12%, right? So every month on some of the farms that we work, we monitor that. So every month we have this gestation. And for example, I have farms that have 30% short gestation, right? So every time that you go, and it's very sensitive, I mean, it will trigger, like in a month, you will see that, right? It will trigger, you know, a lot of short gestation. And then those cows will have both cows and calf more issues. So a way to see in a practical way inflammation is perhaps a monitor the short gestations, right? And the bulk of the cows are going to be between 270 days and 283. There you have about 82% of the cows, right? And then there will be a few, like 5, 6, or 7% that the short gestation, except that you're using some of these, like limousine bulls, you know, the beef on dairy. Some of that, in particular farm, you might see more, like 20% of extended gestation. But that is the implication. the effect of desire more than anything else.
Yeah. So one of the major impacts of mycotoxins is potentially to shorten gestation length. And again, you said it's a major problem. Talk us through a couple of the implications of that, maybe both for the dam and for the calf.
Exactly. And, for the audience, why gestation length is important. And usually most farms will have anywhere between 60 and 50 days, right? Dry period, right? And assume that most of those cows were dry off because of pregnancy. So there is about 60 days. Let's just use a 60-day average. In that 60 days, you have more than 50% of the total calf birth weight, right? In 2 months, you have the, over 50%, like 52, 55, of the total calf birth weight. The last month of gestation is when the calf formed the brain, right? The brain is there, but the connections and everything. There is a structure within the brain that is so important for calf health, that is the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus controls the GI permeability, right? And an example, if your cows are losing weight prior to calving, because a number of things, it could be because of overcrowding in the pen, because inconsistent the feed bank management, because there are too many cows in a particular way. So let's say that your cows are losing weight. Many of them will go earlier in labor because of the stress, right? But it also affects, because we monitor colostrum quality, right? We monitor, even though we feed the same to all of these, so calves that were born from these particular dams, regardless of colostrum management, do have more health problems. And the most important for baby calf are either diarrhea, the most sensitive, and then pneumonia. And diarrhea is perhaps the most important because you see that right away. And so every time that we, the biology at the farm level, the cow is a very integrated system. So sometimes if you affect the last portion of the gestation, you will have an effect on the calf, right? And we believe based on what is the literature about it, that is affecting especially the last month of gestation and how those connections came about. And then the calf, no matter what we do at the farm, when it comes to colostrum management, so because we know very little about also about, we know that colostrum is important, but colostrum itself has more than 400 chemicals inside. And so that is how we came about to see that every time that we have more cow with short gestations, then we see more problems. So the reaction to that was to figure it out what it was, right? What was triggering these short gestation cows? And the summer we already know, twin pregnancy in some particular farm, it was. Back in 10 years ago, very because of welfare implication and the need to come up with other breeding strategies at the farm level, we went away, instead of using time AI, to more heat detection, which makes sense. It definitely makes sense, but some of these cows and, We initiate breeding when the cow is almost in the peak of lactation, right? And so their metabolism is so high that it brings down some of the hormones involved in reproduction. And one of those are progesterone and estradiol as well. But progesterone is perhaps the most important. So what happens is the cow on a heat detection program can have multiple ovulations. Right. Then you have more twins, and more twins meaning you're going to have more short gestation. And then it's a cycle, so everything is connected.
Yeah.
So then we eliminate some of these twin pregnancy. We kind of figure out how to control that. And then we eliminate some of the heat stress and the heat abatement to get it in place, make sure we were doing the best we could at the farm level. Then is when we start looking more at what we were feeding to the cows. right? And that is when mycotoxin came on board, right? And to explain some of these short gestation could be delivered through what the cow were eating, right? And it was interesting because I was looking at the, you know, especially in the upper Midwest, and that happened also in other South America is common, and as well in Europe, and we feed wheat straw quite a bit, like 30%. And it's remarkable because some of the wheat straw, depending on the year, most for the upper, we have local, like in, you have in Michigan as well, but some come from Kansas, and some year it could be below, you know, low risk, and some other year it could be 1,000 ppm and down. So even 30% inclusion in the diet will put the whole TMR to a medium risk, right? To a medium risk, you know, when it comes to contamination, just because of the wheat straw.
Yeah, that's fascinating. We tend to not think about that, again, I think because most people start with the lactating cows, right? When they're thinking about mycotoxins, and there's usually no or very little straw in a diet like that. So it's a really good point. And yeah.
Elevate animal performance with Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition, your trusted ally in excellence. Their high-quality feed ingredients like coated nutrients and fat powders provide ruminants with extra energy, boosting health, productivity, and cost efficiency. Unleash your herd's potential with Berg & Schmidt.
Real quick, are there one or two strategies you usually try to help farms work through? Let's say you do an analysis. They have a lot of cows that are calving early, showing short gestation length. Maybe you identify a feed or two that's high in mycotoxins. What's the next steps that you typically point people to?
The number one thing is, I mean, you definitely need to know what you are feeding to the cow in terms of the TMR. So the TMR perhaps is the number one, you know, things to test, right? And there are a few things there, you know, most, I would say, nutritionists, they do check, you know, their TMR. And when it comes to the mycotoxin, I would say we have several labs here in, across the country that they have very well established quality controls to measure mycotoxin.
Yep.
And to get one, start with the TMR, right? Just to get an idea of the TMR, and at the TMR, you have to have a protocol to sample. Right after they drop, you know, from the mixer, go get the sample from the, in particular, it could be any of the pen, but let's just, we're talking about prepartum here, the dry cows or the prepartum cows, get that one sample and submit it to the lab. And then in the lab, you definitely need to run this liquid chromatography, you know, the mass liquid chromatography. So, and then there are several panels, you know, by default, usually we ask for four because most of us are dealing with four mycotoxins here in the upper Midwest, either DON, fumonisin, zearalenone, and T2 toxin. Most of them, so there are four, but some of the lab has seven mycotoxin panel or 11 or 14, right? So if you ask for the complete packet, it costs about $300 maybe now, right? And then you get, that is perhaps step number one, to get a good sample. And most of the variation when it comes to the sample is how good or bad we are collecting the sample, right? Because there is little variation at the lab level.
Yep.
And so once you know that you have the mycotoxin, the next things you know is get an idea about your risk level, right? This is the most important, is your risk. So, and when it comes to risk, it's almost impossible not to have some mycotoxin, right?
Right.
We look at low risk, medium, or high risk, right? The combination of mycotoxin really matter. DON or bimotoxin is definitely the most important because the prevalence is, if you do have mycotoxin, 65% of the time, you're going to have to deal with that one. Just that mycotoxin alone, right? To look at the level of mycotoxin, and usually that level will come in part per billion. And so, for example, DON, if you are more than 300 ppb parts per billion, then you are in the medium range, right? Like I mentioned, you know, we do have last year, for example, you know, our wheat straw, and there are not all batches, but there were some wheat straw that come with over 1,000 ppm, right? Just the wheat straw, right? Zearalenone, every time that you are more than 100 ppb, it's an issue, you know. Definitely, you know, aflatoxin, you know, to check. And I'm glad that aflatoxin is the regulator, because it's regulated by the FDA, but it's the easiest when it comes to control it at the farm level, because anything, you know, you can bind it, right? Dawn does not bind to almost anything, right? So you need definitely a deactivator. It's another enzyme from another fungus that they live together in the soil, and some of these mycotoxins are toxin for each other. So on the evolution, they develop this enzyme to deactivate that particular compound. And we figured that out, that we can isolate some of these mycotoxins and work some of these through. So T2, fumonosin, you know, some of these as the mycotoxin. Once you establish whether you are low, medium, or high, then the next step, if you are high, either medium or high, you definitely need to come up with an approach, how you're going to do it. The first one is just to see whether or not you can control it by the inclusion, right? If you suspect, because the next step is to test some of the ingredients, because that will be the easier and the more holistic, right? Yep. When it comes to control it. If by inclusion, reducing the inclusion of particular ingredient, you can come up to a low risk, right? A low risk. You always are gonna manage risk at the farm level, right? If by removing the inclusion is not an option, now you have to select the binder. Right? Now you know the mycotoxin, you know that you cannot control or reduce the inclusion at the farm level. Now you have to select the binder. Let's say that your mycotoxin, you're dealing with four that we usually see, you know, Dawn, fumonosin, zearalenone, and T2 toxin, right? Dawn will have a profound effect in rumen function, right? Digestion of the fiber, so it could drop, you know, reduce dry matter intake. And also it's very inflammatory, right, at the cellular level, right? Affect, you know, the metabolism, and it also could drop milk yield and increase fat in milk, right? It causes a lot of issues. And another important component is some of these compounds has a direct negative effect. More cows will produce their B vitamin complex in the rumen, you know, the bacteria. So some of these chemical compounds interfere with that. Then your somatic cell, because the B complex is responsible to produce the keratin plaque. Then you start having some issues when the cow start lactating, right? Associated with increased mastitis or somatic cell count. Fumonosin is more at the GI tract level, but also the liver and the GI tract, right? Zearalenone is usually reproduction. It's abortion, reproduction, and most of the time will come from the grain, right? In the grain. And then the T2 toxin is more associated with the liver and the immune system and depressed milk fat. Right? So step number one is to select a broad spectrum feed additive, right? To bind some of these mycotoxins. And I'm going to be clear here because there is nothing free, right? So some of the binders, they also are inespecific, right? So when it comes to the binders, right, when it comes to selecting the binders, you're going to have basically five different categories, right? The ones that we call inorganic, right, like zeolite and some of that, organoclay, right, because the clay is something, you know, that binds some of these mycotoxin. Organics, algae, yeast, you know, those are, and then activated charcoal, those are the old versions and the ones that we used for many years. And the newer version are some of these enzymes. So they are called deactivator, right? And then you can make a mix in your binder. Select the inorganic, organic, and a deactivator. And you always recommend to select three things: inorganic, organic, and deactivator, because you're gonna deal with more than one mycotoxin, right? If you're dealing with aflatoxin, any of the organoclay will control it. It's fairly easy because aflatoxin binds to anything. Zearalenone and DON, they do not. They do not. So you definitely need a deactivator, right? A deactivator. But what the issue could be there is, once you know the binder and you know they are in a specific, meaning they can also reduce vitamins, especially the, you know, A, D, and E, they can reduce substantially about 20% or more vitamin. They can reduce also minerals, copper and selenium, which we need it also for health, right? And the most important is amino acids, right? Especially lysine and methionine. They can reduce substantially, almost 45%. So you definitely need to adjust the diet. Right. Once you know the mycotoxin, you know that now you cannot reduce some of these amino acids. You select the binder. You might need to adjust the vitamins and mineral, knowing that some of the binder will also bind to some of these compound. You may need to consider whether or not you're going to add the B complex vitamin because the rumen is not working properly. Right? You might have to add it, you know. And then you may consider to use buffer as well, especially if you're dealing with DON, right? The buffer is important because you're dealing with some of these DON. So all this has a cost, right? So some years the farmer are able to cover those costs because of feed cost and because of meal price. And some years it's not that easy to, you know, come up with a, you know, a solution. But that will be the fourth step, right? Selecting the binder, making a decision about vitamins and minerals, using the buffer, and then considering or not adding these protected B-complex vitamin and amino acid.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Diamond V, because animal health deserves a healthier approach. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Trow Nutrition, North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Adiseo, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of Smartamine M, the best in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, capture more value from their components, and maintain the lifetime performance of their herds. For more product information and to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, go to milkpay.com.
Logical progression of steps there. All right, so we're running out of time to wrap up this conversation. Got our three questions that we throw at every one of our guests. First of all, what's your favorite dairy-related book or resource that you turn to?
The dairy-related book, perhaps one of the best at the farm level, but you know, for anyone, is the NASEM 2021, and because it's the overall consensus that come up with the best we could to say how we should do it at the farm level, especially when it comes to formulating a ration and understanding how things play out at the farm level. So NASEM, or the nutrient requirement for cattle, definitely is one of my favorite.
All right. What about your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
We all work with people.
Yeah.
Right. This is it. We are in the people business. So what I really like are the TED Talks and YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
And in particular for those done by Simon Sinek, and that he talked about trust and performance and also leadership, right? I think he really is a great, you know, motivator. It's a great speaker, and he covers so many important components when it comes to lead a team at the farm level. I think these are important, especially for manager or those individuals who want to lead group of individuals, because at the end of the day, we have to communicate no matter what, right? And those TED Talks are really, really good.
Good idea. All right. And then last question. In your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
This is a very interesting question. I think there are three things that I see in my last 20 years working in the field. And the number one is that most of these successful, whether it's a manager, a dairy farmer, a consultant, right, is they understood three things. One is what is luck, right? They clearly understood what is luck, right? And it's what happened when preparation meets opportunity.
Okay, yeah.
So they definitely know that to be lucky, you had to be prepared, right? It's about learning, right? They definitely know that. And they also understood that later, sooner or later, we all are going to have an opportunity, right? The difference is whether or not we are prepared, right? Same is in any dairy farm. The next one, I think they really got it. Maybe they didn't know, but they got it, that what is success, right? And it's basically, don't be afraid to fail, because success are these small failures and learning. So it's very, very difficult to achieve success if you didn't make a mistake, right? Things is important here is you cannot make always the same mistake, right? You cannot always.
Yep.
But to be successful, don't be afraid to make mistake, because that will paralyze you. You won't do anything. And the third one is that they do, especially at the farm level, they know what are the five principles of teamwork, effective teamwork. Clear objectives, clear roles, mutual trust. Nothing works without trust, right? Effective communication, the most important is listening, right? And they are constantly measuring and assessing the objective, and they have a process of continuous improvement. So I think those are the three things that I see. They know that to get lucky, you have to be prepared. They know that to be successful, we have to pay and learn. And they know how to work in teams.
Thank you very much. Good answer. So it's been a fascinating conversation with you, Gustavo. Thank you for joining us again. This has been Dr. Gustavo Schuneman from The Ohio State University. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Barry.
This has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. If you haven't followed us yet, make sure you hit the button so you don't miss the next episode. And we'll see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.